This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Yesterday marked the 25th anniversary of the signing into law of the Americans with Disabilities Act. On the anniversary, the Charlotte Observer published a story by the Associated Press, which told of the diving accident in 1980 of an 18-year-old. That accident paralyzed the young man from the chest down and changed his life. He had to find a new college to attend because the one he chose was not accessible to a disabled person. When he found his first job, he had to be carried up and down to the second floor because the building had no elevator. The story reminded us that prior to the passage of the ADA in 1990, those with disabilities largely stayed at home. But the act was monumental in its scope, mandating changes that make public spaces accessible and by protecting people with disabilities from discrimination. It was a sea change, but the job isn't done. Although the act has positively impacted 55 million Americans, those with disabilities, the largest untapped labor force in the country, still face challenges, which accounts for why more than 28% of working-age people with disabilities live in poverty. This hour we look back, take stock of where we are, where we've come from, and look forward to what's left to be done if those with disabilities are to have true equal access. Lindsay Hauser is founder and CEO of Advocations. That's a 100% disability-owned company dedicated to helping connect businesses with jobs to those with disabilities who need and can perform those jobs. Thank you for being here. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Brandon Matthews is your right-hand person. He is director of recruitment for Advocations. Thank you for joining.
Thank you so much for having us, Mike.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Terry Bradley is community relations manager and the ADA coordinator with the City of Charlotte. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Mike.
All three in our Spirit Square studio, and joining us by phone from Raleigh is Corey Dunn, director of public policy for Disability Rights North Carolina. They are a nonprofit whose team of attorneys, advocates, paralegals, and support staff provide advocacy and legal services at no charge for people with disabilities across the state. As the state's federally mandated protection and advocacy system, Disability Rights North Carolina, they say, is charged with protecting the rights of children and adults with disabilities living in the Tar Heel State. Good morning, Corey. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
First of all, somebody around this table or on the phone, define the term disability for me as it's defined by the Americans with Disabilities Act. What does it mean to have a disability? Go ahead. Terry. Well, no, let's draw straws here. Terry, go ahead.
Someone with a disability, that means that they're not having the ability to have or do certain things and in traditional ways. So there may be some limitations on their abilities to do or perform certain things. But there is still always an opportunity for someone if they're looked at and or their situation is kind of placed in the proper perspective, always something to help them or accommodate them to be able to access certain services.
Corey, I mean, not everybody is going to be, it's not going to be apparent to everyone that somebody has a disability. If you're sitting in a wheelchair, yes, that's obvious, that's a clue. But some people may have a disability that is not readily recognizable. How is that defined? Well, in other words, what is it that says to the people having to comply with ADA that the person they're talking to has a disability?
That's absolutely right, Mike. So the ADA actually says that a person with a disability is someone with a physical or a mental impairment that substantially limits one or more major life activities. It can also include, for the purposes of the law, someone who has a history or a record of that kind of impairment, or someone who is perceived by others as having that kind of impairment in terms of receiving protections under the ADA. But those impairments could be really, really wide-ranging, from mobility impairment, as you suggest, that might lead someone to use a wheelchair to get around. It might include a visual impairment that makes it difficult for someone to see in a full range of vision. It might include a mental illness that prevents someone from being able to interact with others in a way that others would read as typical. So there are both really very visible disabilities and many, many disabilities that are much harder to see.
Now, a lot of people are very lucky not to have any disabilities, but I read yesterday that there are, if you're not interested in the Americans with Disabilities Act and what it means, just wait a while, because you will be, because the fact is, if you're not born with a disability, you may acquire one as you go through life. That's kind of a
right.
Scary prospect.
One in four will acquire a disability before retirement age.
So you should be concerned about this, even if you're perfectly healthy and walking upright right now.
It should matter to you.
Go ahead,
Corey. It affects nearly every household at some point.
As the ADA coordinator for the city of Charlotte, Terry, what do you look at? What does the law say you as a government entity must do?
For Title II purposes, it ensures that all of our city services, all of our activities, all of our services are made accessible to the public. And that's ensuring that everyone has equal access to all of our city services, no matter what their ability would be to get in or access to the services.
And realistically, what does that mean? Obviously, wheelchair ramps, elevators, things like that. But that's just the tip of the iceberg, it would seem to me.
It would be all of our facilities, our websites, anything that we communicate with through the city of Charlotte, our sidewalks, of course, any of our activities, whether it's a service that we provide away from our facilities, but just having everything that we at the city of Charlotte that we provide to the citizens, making sure that they have equal access to it.
And does this apply only to governments at all levels because it's a federal law, or does it also apply to public businesses that want to bring customers through the door?
It would also apply to public building, public services as well, but that's a different title. Mm-hmm. The city of Charlotte or the city or municipalities are governed by ADA Title II. And when you look at private, that side of it would be ADA Title III, just on public accommodations, ensuring that individuals have access to those public places.
Yeah, those of us who have been around for a while remember when the ADA went into effect, and suddenly at every street corner they were tearing out the curbs and putting in little ramps to allow people with wheelchairs access to get up on the curb from the street level. Aside from, Corey, removing a lot of physical barriers that most able-bodied people never thought about, which is why they were there, I suppose, how has the world changed in the last 25 years for people living with disabilities?
Well, there really has been an incredible amount of technology and innovation to make it possible for folks with disabilities to become more integrated into their communities. You mentioned websites and other kinds of communication. It's now possible for someone with a visual impairment or hearing impairment or some other sort of language impairment to have access to information in a way that wouldn't have been possible, certainly, when the ADA was passed. Of course, most of us weren't even thinking about the possibility of the Internet and the substantial role it plays in our lives now. But now it's possible for a job applicant who maybe doesn't read or can't see to use technology to complete a job application. So we're not just talking about interacting with government agencies and public accommodations as a customer. We're also talking about, is it possible for someone to really participate in the economic life of our communities as an employee, as a business owner? So technology has been a huge part of what's changed over the last.
Now, Brandon Matthews is with us. He is the director of recruitment for Advocations, and they help people get jobs who have those with disabilities to get jobs. And I was going to ask a question about how easy it is to get around in the world, and who better to ask it than of Brandon, because you're in a wheelchair this morning.
Yeah,
Brandon.
Absolutely.
And if you try to get into this building from the main entrance, you have to go up.
A side door,
because there's a ramp. But then when you get in the building, how do you get up the four or five or six stairs that are in the lobby?
You have to go down this creepy hallway and go up a side elevator up past the first staircase there to get up here. Yeah, it's interesting. I grew up on the Outer Banks, a place that's not accessible at all. And so that's what really attracted me to the city of Charlotte. And so when I moved here, I was really excited to see the amount of accessibility that actually exists. But as I started digging deeper into it, you know, I've started to realize that it's not as accessible as it should be. Yeah. I wrote an op-ed recently, and I mentioned the Dandelion Market in Uptown, a public business that is just not accessible at all, that I can't even get into. So there's still a lot of work to be done. And this is a good example of why little ramps are really easy to build to get past.
And for those who, if I'm right about this, and I could be wrong, so correct me if I am, the Dandelion Market's in a very old building.
Yeah, well.
And what do you do about very old buildings?
You know, we've been talking about this, you know, behind the scenes a little bit as well. And what I encourage people to do, and I think this is most important for patrons who visit their restaurant, encourage the ownership to build a ramp, encourage folks to really push management on the fact that people should have access to every building they want to have access to. And I think it starts with a blunt conversation and why it needs to happen, which is why I'm super excited that you invited us to be here today, because I think conversations like this is what's really going to make a huge impact.
You know, when I was reading your bio, you just mentioned this, and I read it in your bio that you moved here from the Outer Banks and that the Outer Banks is not really accessible to people in wheelchairs. Now, I understand not being able to go out on the beach, on the sand, because it's hard to roll.
But you can do that.
Well, you can do it. It's just difficult to roll in the sand. It just has to be. But what about the Outer Banks other than that? Not accessible.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I was the first person to attend my school in a wheelchair. So a lot had to be done to make that accessible. And I think that's a really good example of conversations that really affect change. From the very beginning, my family had to have deep conversations with school administration to really help them understand what I needed. And we really saw changes take place because of that. And from that, the community started to see that I was just like everyone else, and that I was an important member of the community as well. So I think that's just a really good example of how conversations can help.
Terry Bradley, you have called this an issue of civil rights. Is that how the city views it?
Definitely. I think first and foremost it's about equity of services. I think that we look at it from having the responsibility for all of our citizens, that if we provide a service that or anything that the city of Charlotte would provide, everyone should have equal access to it. Mm-hmm. It's a part of something that they pay for as a taxpaying citizen, so everyone should have an equal right to use that service.
Aside from curbs without ramps and staircases that people in wheelchairs cannot access, what are the biggest obstacles, Lindsay, to people with disabilities right now?
I'm going to focus on employment. It's the only thing that really hasn't moved forward since the passing of the ADA. There are 20% of people with disabilities are participating in the labor force right now. That's 20%. That means 80% of people are not. And it is the correlation between disability and poverty is too rarely discussed. And employment is that one way to help people, you know, fully become self-sufficient, be able to be engaged members of society, and be the only group that really wants to become taxpayers.
15 years ago, in 2000, 10 years after the passage of the ADA, one national organization said that there was no significant difference in unemployment rates, especially among women with disabilities, since the passage of the Act. Here we are 15 years after that. Are you saying then that that's the same thing? Nothing has changed?
In terms of employment, nothing has changed. And people continue to have the same challenges with perception, the fact that they, you know, employers and businesses believe people with disabilities inherently just cannot work. And that's just not the case. We place people, Charlotte residents, over 500 since we started Avocation 6 years ago.
Okay. We're going to come back and talk more about Avocations, because they do place people with disabilities with people who have jobs, wanting people to fill them. Mm-hmm. And these people can fill them in many cases. We'll come back with more in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Historic Columbia, the Woodrow Wilson family home, South Carolina's only presidential site that explores the Reconstruction time period that helped shape a nation and a president. Tour times and info at historiccolumbia.com. www.ADA.org. Well, it seems that everybody has a cell phone these days, even children, and your kids are probably on your computer more than you are. So when should you allow your child to have their own cell phone, their own computer, or social media accounts for that matter? Should you monitor their texting or Facebook or Instagram pages? What's the impact of all that screen time on children? We take a look at the healthy use of technology for kids and adults when Charlotte Talks tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, after a series of wins, President Obama sets his sights on criminal justice reform, implementing the Iran deal and race relations. President Obama's priorities for the remainder of his term.
That's the Diane Rehm Show, coming up next from 10 to noon, right after Charlotte Talks, on listener-funded public radio, or 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the Americans with Disabilities Act and what it has meant to those living with disabilities in the 25 years since it was passed. The first President Bush signed it into law in 1990, 25 years ago yesterday. Lindsay Hauser is with us. She's the founder and CEO of Advocations. That's a nonprofit organization that helps to find that helps to find jobs for people with disabilities. Brandon Matthews is their director of recruitment. Both are in the studio with us, along with Terry Bradley, who's community relations manager and ADA coordinator for the city of Charlotte. And Corey Dunn joins us by phone. She's the director of public policy for Disability Rights North Carolina. That's a legal organization that works, I guess, pro bono for people with disabilities. What kind of cases do you take on, Corey?
We have a really, I think our docket is pretty fascinating. We have cases right now that I think your listeners might be interested in, for example, that are challenging the way that the Department of Motor Vehicles handles its medical review program. When a driver is believed to have an impairment that might affect their ability to operate a vehicle, they are potentially referred to what they call the medical review program. And for many of our clients, that program has been completely arbitrary and difficult to navigate and incredibly expensive to be a part of. We've seen people who have a disability that's been static their entire lives, not something that's degenerative, for example, something that limits the use of one hand, for example. And they've used the exact same assistive technology to operate a vehicle since they were first licensed at age 16, and yet the DMV insists that they be retested every year with substantial expense and time involved in that process. So we're working to make sure that programs like the DMV, licensing drivers, is fair to people with disabilities.
Okay. Do you drive?
I do not. No, I have some folks that take care of that. But I do have an accessible van.
So that's another impediment to your being able to get around as easily as ordinary people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not ordinary people, but people with disabilities.
Well, right. Yeah. No, I have an incredible team here in Charlotte that helps me out with that. But I think that's one of the number one barriers to things like employment is transportation. Folks don't know what kind of resources are available. You know, the city of Charlotte has done an incredible job with making CAT system really accessible. But in many cases, people can't get to those bus lines. And so then there just becomes another barrier.
But don't they come and pick you up? Don't they have a shuttle that picks people up with disabilities?
They do. They have special transportation services. But like the cable guy, they'll give you a three-hour window where they'll pick you up. So it doesn't really make it helpful for employment.
The Associated Press article that I referred to in the opening of the show that talked about the 25th anniversary of the signing of the ADA points out that the unemployment rate for those with disabilities is outrageous. Those are their words. And that the law isn't going to change attitudinal barriers. Is that the biggest barrier right now? People's attitudes.
Yes, people with disabilities can work, and that needs to be something in companies. If you're looking for somebody that's innovative, somebody that overcomes problems and challenges every day, you can tap into an incredible workforce that's ready to meet new challenges. And if you think about most companies are concerned about reasonable accommodations, think about things that have gone mainstream that started off as accommodations. The football huddle. I don't know if you guys all watch football. The next time you're watching it, it actually came into play with Gallaudet University, a football team, and they huddled because they didn't want the other team stealing their plays because they were doing sign language. And while they've abandoned it, the mainstream and NFL continue to do the huddle. Mm. Text messaging has gone mainstream. That was started off as a way for people with hearing impairments and deaf people to be able to communicate. If you think about all the different ways that if you take off the tagline reasonable accommodation and just think about them as adjustments, things that, you and I do on a day-to-day basis that don't require an extra level of paperwork can really help somebody perform in their job. And that's all we're looking to do. And most people, they can work without accommodations.
And I know from reading your bio, Brandon, that you have you have several degrees and you were trying to find a job and people yeah. were passing you up and you couldn't figure out why. And it turns out it was mostly because you're in a wheelchair.
Yeah, I think, that's the number, in my opinion, the number one thing is perception. There's this negative stigma around someone with a disability.
Is it ignorance or is it prejudice?
Well,
or fear.
It could be a mixture of all three of those things. I think that, a lot of it has to do with lack of education around disability. And that's where the blunt conversations, again, come in to really start educating folks about what disability actually is. Mm-hmm. But the problem with having those blunt conversations is, people are scared to start those conversations and really ask those tough questions that could really impact someone's perception about what disability actually is.
I was going to ask you about that much later on in the program, but you brought it up now, so let's talk about it. Because you say that we could benefit from a serious conversation. It sounds very much like race, the conversation we need to have about race in this country. But it's an uncomfortable conversation. People don't know what to ask, and they don't want to be impolite. And you say you should go ahead and do it. Just get it out of the way. What are the blunt questions that need to be asked?
I was thinking about this. So I wrote a list down just to talk about. Just simply, can you explain your disability? It's okay to ask that question. I think along with this, too, the disability community needs to open up and allow these types of questions. And I think they do to a certain extent. But knowing they're going to come in advance is a great thing. And, explain your disability. What can and can't you do? What are your biggest pet peeves in life? For instance, one of mine is handicap parking. Spots are always taken by, not accessible cars who don't really need to be parked there. So that's just an example. What are your interests? I think that really shows what people can actually do and that I'm no different than anyone else, which is an important question to ask. And then how do you do certain things? Like you asked about transportation earlier. How do you drive? How do you get around? Different questions like that are the types of questions that need to be asked to really start this conversation.
But if we have a conversation with somebody like you, you have multiple sclerosis. Is that
cerebral palsy.
Cerebral palsy, excuse me. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And you've had that since birth. So you've lived with this your entire life. You're probably more comfortable in your own skin than we are asking you about what it feels like to be in your own skin. So how do we as able-bodied people approach you if we have concerns, if we have questions? It seems impolite to ask a lot of these
questions. Yeah, and I think that's part of the way folks are raised in a lot of senses, being fearful of asking those tough questions. But in a lot of ways, again, I think it's important for the disability community to take it upon ourselves to really start these tough conversations, which is why I wrote that op-ed a couple of weeks ago and wanted to join you all here today is to really begin this. And I think it's going to take breaking down the brick wall of tough questions to really get it going. Mm-hmm. And what I tell folks is just do it. I hated going into interviews, for example, and the folks just not wanting to ask traditional interview questions because of of my disability. They didn't understand that I could answer questions just like everyone else could. And so I think that it's time for people to start realizing that I am no different than anyone else. Just because I use a wheelchair to get around doesn't mean that I'm not fully able to do a job or to do anything else in life.
Corey Dunn, you represent people who have been discriminated against, just as Corey obviously has been discriminated against from time to time. When you have these conversations with the people you're going after... do they come? Do they see the light? Do they begin to understand that? Yeah, what I believed was wrong, and I could use this person.
That does happen. Actually, a lot of our work is educating, especially in the world of employment, educating employers about the law and about what is possible, and getting them to think just a little more creatively about how to make things work. And I do think that many employers who have been in the position of having, perhaps run afoul of the ADA at some point, then learn that compliance is actually not that hard.
Hmm. In 2014, 64% of those without disabilities were employed, while only 17% of those with disabilities were employed. But you point out, Lindsay, that in North Carolina, less than 6% of the claims, I think it's you, Lindsay, it could be Corey, less than 6% of the claims related to the ADA are related to hiring. Is the disability the factor here, or is something else at work?
I think people sort of take for granted the hiring process if you don't have a non-apparent disability or an apparent disability. And so, for example, they don't know that there's any recourse. They just think it's par for the course. Brandon said he went to several interviews. I think our interview is slightly different because we didn't assume anything. I think that's one of the biggest challenges when people go through the hiring process is the assumptions. And how do you deal with those assumptions directly when you're trying to get a job? You don't want to, be competitive to that person that's interviewing you. But at the same time, you want to let your ability shine in a way that, you're not going to be discriminated against. So it's really a tough sort of situation when you're applying for a job. And if it's not just blatant disregard, then I think that's why there's only 6% of claims, because it's really hard to say that the reason why they weren't selected for the job was the disability.
Well, I was going to ask, Corey, how difficult is it to prove discrimination based on disability?
It's much harder in hiring than it is in retention or promotion. So, for example, if I apply for a job and I am one of 200 applicants for a single position, it's more difficult to prove that the reason I didn't get a particular position is because of my disability. It's often more clear to demonstrate discrimination when it happens during the course of employment once you are employed. And so that is the bulk of the employment-related claims regarding disability are during employment, not in the hiring process. So ADA protections do apply to the hiring process.
How does the city of Charlotte handle this? How do you handle the interview process? How do you prepare people who are conducting the interviews for the hiring process to deal with people who come in exhibiting various disabilities? How do you then deal with that person once they're hired in making sure that their supervisors are being fair to them and not assigning them work that would be impossible for them to do just so they could say, well, they can't do the work, let's get rid of them? How do you handle it?
Well, Mike, to be honest, I think within the last few years, I think that the city of Charlotte has probably been a little bit more aggressive with recruitment mm-hmm. in that particular area. And what we're probably more focused on now is probably just messaging and how we do things. I think a lot of times in the past, an individual may have actually come for an interview, and the accessibility to even get an interview or make application may have been a little bit more challenging. So the message that we were sending off the very back was, this is not a place that you might want to consider. But changing that and saying that we're welcoming all people to come in to have access to make applications.
But have you provided training for the people who are doing the hiring, the people who are supervising employees, to understand what the special needs may be and what the how to deal with those people as they come in and recognize their talents and abilities as they do the job interview, et cetera? Are you providing training for people?
And I think our HR specialists, they are undergoing training on an ongoing basis and more focused on ADA and the needs and the actual transition of those things right now.
Lindsay, you came from a different line of work to start your company, and you started your company, which is a hiring, a matchmaker company, essentially, for people with disabilities to go and get jobs. And you started your company at the depths of the recession, which is a pretty brave thing or stupid thing to do. I don't know which.
I don't know. I was 25 and I had a dream and a Discover card, so I just made it work.
So when you talk to prospective employers about people that you're representing to get jobs who have disabilities, is it a hard sell?
You know, I think it's changed even in the time that I started my company, and that is to Section 503 is a big game changer.
What is Section 503?
Section 503 is a new or a reaffirming of the 1973 Rehabilitation Act that empowers federal contractors of any size that earn more than $10,000 annually in federal funds to hire at an affirmative action rate of 7% people with disabilities in every job group. And so that's a game changer because now we can actually have that disability conversation. Before, you know, we would say this person's, you know, super qualified and we would obviously always focus on their abilities. But now we can drop the disability, you know, and realize that companies are actually looking to hire. So we're working with Boston Scientific, for example. We're actively recruiting talent with disabilities nationwide to fill their roles.
And why? They want you to do this. Why do they want you to do this?
Well, they see the business case behind it. They see the innovation. And you know, I think that they're more motivated, I think, than a lot of companies to do it beyond just their regulation and the Section 503 requirement.
Let's be honest here. Does this cause some companies to comply with these rules and regulations? Does it cause them any particular hardship?
I think it does. I think it's time. I think it's helping people have conversations. I name my company Avocations because we're working with we're not only advocating for the individual, but for the business. And so sometimes when they are not able to have those tough conversations, we can help them have, you know, gain perspective in a new and a different way. Because when there are challenges and, you know, sometimes people are overlooked for opportunities, and before Corey gets involved, we can help mediate. Mm. For example, you know, we worked with a warehouse group that's in Charlotte, and, you know, despite the person having, you know, the DMV allowing them to drive a motorcycle in a car, they didn't feel it was safe for him to be driving a forklift.
Because?
Because he had a hearing impairment.
So he couldn't hear the beeps?
Right, but it was okay for him to walk around about 250 pieces of equipment that were flying around the warehouse. It was just unsafe for him.
Yeah, the beeps are not for the driver. They're the people. It's to warn the people around the forklift that the forklift is moving in a particular direction. So the driver doesn't really need to hear the beeps, does he?
I know. I think that if we could have a little bit more common sense when it comes to things like that.
Well, that's what you point out. And I read something that you wrote, and you point out that the people who write these laws and who try to follow these laws sometimes forget the common sense aspect of this. The law may be written in such a way that if you use common sense, you'll get in trouble, right?
Just do the right thing.
Okay.
I think it all starts with those tough conversations again, because a lot of people don't know that that person could drive that forklift around until we got in there and started telling them what, you know, that person could do. And I think that's where it all starts.
In the op-ed piece that you wrote about your own story, Brandon, you say, I have a degree in marketing and a significant media and PR experience, so why wasn't I getting jobs? What I quickly realized is that it wasn't me, it was the negative perception the person interviewing me had about people with disabilities. Heck, I even had individuals bluntly refuse to believe anything on my resume because they just didn't think it was possible for me to have such education or experiences. How insulting that must be to you. Why do you think they feel that?
Well, I think they've never seen anyone, you know, in a lot of cases, they've never seen anyone with a disability do what I've done. And a lot of that is because people with disabilities haven't been given the opportunity to do what I have done. And it's a really, and I call it in the piece, I think, a horrific cycle that we really need to break. Because the truth of the matter is, you know, I do have all of these experiences, but a lot of people do not see that to a certain extent.
There is an upside to this, and we'll get to that with Corey Dunn in a moment, because you say, Corey, that one of the most exciting opportunities here in the area of improvement is in the area of employment. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Tyndall Subaru Gastonia. Test drives are available in the new 2015 Forester SUV with EyeSight technology that sees problems and initiates action to help avoid trouble. Details at TyndallSubaru.com. Obama.com. In the home stretch of his presidency, Barack Obama has quieted any talk of being a second-term lame duck with big wins on trade, the Affordable Care Act, Iran, and more. And now he's setting his sights on other issues, including criminal justice reform and race relations. On the Diane Rehm Show, coming up in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock, where they take a look at President Obama's political priorities for the remainder of his term. That's coming up right after our program. And if you'd like to join our conversation, you can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook or Twitter. We're coming right back.
It's your world. We help you explore it.
Cubans raised their flag at the renamed embassy in Washington, D.C., but it will be a few more weeks before Secretary...
It's your Ranger. Community. We help you understand it.
Bicyclist Dean Broadhag and his friend are out for a leisurely ride along the Little Sugar Creek Greenway just east of Uptown.
It's a hot day, and we're just...
Morning Edition on WFAE is an essential way to start your day and stay connected to your world. Listen weekday mornings from 5 to 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about disabilities, people with disabilities, and getting them gainful employment in the era of the Americans with Disabilities Act, which was signed into law by the first President Bush 25 years ago yesterday. Lindsay Hauser is the founder and CEO of a company called Advocations. They advocate and find jobs for people with disabilities. Brandon Matthews is their director of recruitment. Terry Bradley is a community relations manager and ADA coordinator for the city of Charlotte. And Corey Dunn joins us by phone from Raleigh, where she is director of public policy for Disability Rights North Carolina. You say that one of the most exciting opportunities, Corey, for improvement for those with disabilities is in the area of employment. Is it exciting? Is it an exciting opportunity because the situation is so dismal now it can only get better?
Unfortunately, yes. I mean, they're really, it's one of the areas where we've seen the least progress in the last 25 years. And so it really will only take, even the most modest changes will show improvements, we think. So there's really a movement nationally and in North Carolina toward a way of thinking called employment first. That's really, it's a framework of thinking about employment such that all people, including people with significant disabilities, are capable of full participation in integrated employment and community life. For many years, employment for people with disabilities has meant sub-minimum wage employment in a segregated environment, and we're beyond that now. It's time to really shift our thinking toward a more integrated employment policy and to deal with some of these assumptions that you've just been talking about, that people with disabilities can't or shouldn't work for some reason.
And there are legal, the law backs you up on this, am I right, in almost every case?
Absolutely. So the ADA handles all of the sort of non-discrimination portion of the law, but there are a number of policy initiatives at the federal level to provide incentives, as Lindsay was describing, to make it possible for people with disabilities to find employment because, for example, federal contractors have to make some efforts to recruit and employ people with disabilities. And now there's actually technical assistance available from the federal government when communities, whether that's, you know, a municipal government or employers in a community, really want to improve their recruitment and retention of people with disabilities. So there are resources available now to do the work that we're all so excited about.
Now, Brandon, let me ask a couple of blunt questions.
Yeah.
Here, because you're the guy that has
it.
You have a visible impairment here. I'm a guy. I have a company. I'm hiring. Mm-hmm. You come into my door, into my office, and we have this conversation about you potentially working for me. Do you know going into it what the job is and what you can and cannot do? And are you willing to say, no, I have this disability, so I'm not going to be able to stock shelves. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to be able to ring people out at the cash register. Or maybe you can. Can you?
No, I can't do that. Okay. But the good, the thing is, and I always told employers this as well. I wouldn't have even applied for the job if I didn't think I could do it. I'm really capable of what I can and can't do, and in many cases, that is the case. People are aware of what they can and can't do.
So, do you feel you have to jump through extra hoops to prove to people that you can do what you know you can do?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's part of problem.
Is it wrong of us to assume that you should? Is it wrong of us to make you jump through those extra hoops, or should we just say, okay, take you at face value? Your resume says this. He's done it. I can call and get his references. He can do it.
Yeah. And in a perfect world, that would be the case. It would be wrong for, people to think that. But I understand that people, again, are just not educated about what disability actually is and what I can and can't do. And so I understand why I have to jump through those hoops. But again, in a perfect world, I shouldn't have to
do
that.
You're 23. You've had this disability your entire life. Isn't it exhausting for you to have to deal with this every day? Not the disability, but the ancillary things around the disability, having to fight these extra battles that you have to fight.
Yeah.
You fought them your entire life.
Yeah. I find it empowering in a certain sense because I can help others. A lot of people with disabilities aren't given the ability to talk. And so I've been given this awesome voice to really get out there and share our story and share, what we can and can't do in a lot of cases, like I said earlier. And so, it's not as much exhausting, as it is frustrating to see the fact, that we still have not progressed to a certain extent. And there's still a lot of work to do. I think that the ADA provided a perfect physical checklist, access to elevators and, curb cuts and different things like that. But what it didn't do is really educate about what disability actually is and start those conversations to hopefully have a mental shift in society about what disability is and what we can and can't do as a disability community.
It's usually pretty difficult for a young person just getting out of college to get their first job. It's really tough. There are a lot of kids living at home because they can't get that first job.
Yeah.
So I know that you knew that you would face that, but you knew that you would face that in spades.
Oh, absolutely. I was well aware of that. I was very hopeful because I did, have, these degrees and I worked closely with Johnson Wales University when I was there as well. So I was really hopeful, but I quickly realized that I was going to be facing an uphill battle when it came to employment. A lot of times what I would do is I wouldn't tell people I was in a wheelchair during the phone interview, and I wouldn't tell them until I got an in-person interview, for example, just to make sure that that did not deter them from actually calling me in for an in-person interview. But in many cases, that didn't solve anything because I still got the looks. I still got the confusion when I rolled in the door. And people just did not want to ask specific questions, which was frustrating.
You think that was fair of you to not tell them before you showed up on their doorstep?
Well, I thought it was what I had to do at that time to get an in-person interview because I knew I was capable of doing the job. And they could see I was capable of doing the job via my resume, I hope, to a certain extent. And so I felt like I had to do that in order to go there in person and sell myself to a certain extent to make sure that I did get that job that I wanted.
Lindsay, you helped go ahead, Corey. Go ahead.
I think this question of disclosing disabilities is one that people with disabilities face all the time. So you noted that, Brandon, you noted that you had the choice to disclose over the phone or not. Many people's disabilities are not visible even in that in-person interview. So this question of when and whether to disclose is a constant question for a person with a disability who has the choice of whether or not to disclose. And I think that most people with disabilities really find that very challenging. And historically, people would not disclose. Period.
Right.
It was very clear that disclosure would harm your chances of employment. I think now it's a much more strategic decision. And no, people are not required to disclose disabilities before they are relevant to their job performance. If I have a disability that limits my ability to lift very heavy things and my job doesn't require me to lift very heavy things, there's no need for me to disclose that.
What do you tell applicants, Lindsay?
We always say it's better to disclose, but not disclose the label per se, but the challenges it might present in the workforce. And so we sort of coach people. Obviously, it is a personal choice, but I feel like if it comes up sooner rather than later, it can be very helpful because if there's a performance issue that's related to the disability, it's a little bit harder to sort of handle when the issue is there, because then that little molehill becomes a mountain quite quickly.
If Brandon had been one of your clients at the time he was looking for a job, what would you have told him to do?
I would have told him, you know, do what makes him feel comfortable. And I feel like that, you know, not disclosing, you know, prior to actually having an in-person interview, if that made him feel comfortable, then that's what he needs to do. Mm-hmm. Do I advise that? Do we, you know, one of the benefits of working with a company that specializes in disability is that we can present it in a way that employers can understand, but then they don't have that label to go back and Google and get scared.
There are people with physical handicaps, some of them more viewable than others, but there are also people who have mental handicaps. Is that the big challenge?
Right. I actually started my career and focus on non-apparent disabilities, people with mental health challenges, and that is tough. And 76% of people with non-apparent disabilities would rather lose their job than disclose that they have a disability, which is a huge issue because given simple, you know, modifications or changes in their job duties, they would be able to, you know, retain their employment.
And there's a lot of ignorance surrounding mental disabilities, too, because you have an example of an HR manager requiring an employee with a mental challenge to meet with them weekly for an evaluation when nobody else had to meet weekly for an evaluation. Why did they feel that was necessary?
Because they had an idea that people with mental health challenges are dangerous, and so they needed to continually assess the person's state of mind. But I just encourage businesses to be creative. You know, somebody that may talk to themselves because of their mental health challenge, put a Bluetooth headset in their ear. You know, it's just part of those
things. So people think they're on the phone?
Yeah. It's amazing. we've put that to work, and it's just being more creative in the way you approach what you do day to day and find things that work, you know, for a different reason can apply to the work setting.
Let me share with you some things that have come in while we've been talking here. Kate on Facebook says, in 1972, I was escorted out of a company's headquarters mid-interview for a job. I was told I was too sick to drive. In my 12 years as a diabetic, I was raised to be a responsible, independent person, so I was stunned. I had the privilege of testifying before the committee that was considering the first state law banning discrimination. As individuals, we keep finding ways to separate ourselves by race, by gender, by health, and so it goes. Does this law, does the ADA and the compliance within the city of Charlotte, has it eliminated that kind of thing?
I think we've come quite far within since 1990. As Brandon indicated, it was just a checklist that we provided of things that we needed to do to make more accessible. But I think we're moving into a phase now where we're more focused on education and outreach, having that cultural shift to make have our staff and employees understand their responsibilities as it relates to making things more accessible to the general public, understanding what our responsibilities are when trying to provide different services and programs for our citizens.
Pam writes, my husband was recently diagnosed with ALS and would like to continue working as long as possible. He's an executive in a medium-sized company. His disability will be changing as time goes on. Is his disability covered under the ADA? Corey Dunn.
As I said, a disability under the ADA is really any mental or physical condition that impairs one or more major life functions. And so very possibly, and if it's not today, it may be in the future. So it's a very individual, fact-specific determination. It's not, there's no grid that says if I have this diagnosis, I have a disability. It really is about the function of that individual.
Well, Robert, who also is reaching us through various means, says he wanted to talk about what constitutes a disability, because someone can be disabled from performing their job and still not be covered by the ADA. This comes from the Toyota Motors case, he says, which was a great success for John Roberts as a corporate defense lawyer. A woman lost much of the use of both of her hands from carpal tunnel syndrome, but the Supreme Court said she was not covered by the ADA because she could still carry out other major life activities.
Yes, and limiting these sort of this history of limiting court decisions in employment has been a real barrier for us in making the promise of the ADA real for people with disabilities. But we've also had some good case law. You know, there is the challenging case law that he mentions, but there's also quite a lot of good case law that's developing now as our collective understanding of disability and the prevalence of disability grows. I expect that case law will evolve right along with it. We recently, for example, had a decision in the Fourth Circuit that was the first time that social anxiety disorder was recognized as a disability protected under the ADA, and that where a person's major life functions were impaired by her diagnosis, her condition of social anxiety disorder, and that impacted her work, that she could seek reasonable accommodations in her work, and that has made all the difference. So I really think that I think that's evolving, and I do think that the history of limiting case law doesn't make it impossible for us to move forward. I still think there's a lot of room for progress.
Both you, Corey, and Lindsay have talked about the difficulties in getting people hired and how the unemployment of those with disabilities is much, much, much higher than that of the able-bodied population. But is part of the problem here that the don't hire if you can't fire problem, because people with disabilities become a special class of people who are protected by the law, or people think they are, and so they're afraid to hire them because they can't fire them. Is that part of the problem here?
That's part of the misconception. I believe that full inclusion doesn't make people with disabilities a separate sect of your employment group. I think that it's, you know, you have to hold people with disabilities accountable to the same standards and business processes. They might do the job a little bit differently, but the result needs to still be the same. And so you need to keep them at the same standards. And that's one of the ways we often find employers overly accommodating when they don't need to be.
What needs to happen here? What can private businesses do right now to make their businesses more accessible to clients, to customers?
Yeah, build simple things like ramps in the front of their business that I can't get into. Provide interpreters in the movie theaters or different Broadway productions. You know, provide easier access to elevators instead of going through creepy hallways to get to the side elevator, like in this building.
You'll be going back through that.
Yes, I will. I will. Thanks for the warning there. But so just simple things like that. And I think it all, again, begins with blunt conversations, and that's what we need to have starting from this point, moving on into the next 25 years.
That's Brandon Matthews, Director of Recruitment for Advocations. That's a company started by Lindsay Hauser, one of our other guests, to help people with disabilities to get jobs. Terry Bradley is Community Relations Manager and ADA Coordinator for the City of Charlotte. And Corey Dunn is Director of Public Policy with Disability Rights North Carolina. They are a law firm that represents a lot of people with disabilities who have grievances against employers or potential employers pro bono. Thank you all for the hour.
Charlotte Talks with